Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
In our series we're calling Carbs from Heaven and working through the sixth chapter of John. I'm going to read for you verses 51 to 58. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh. The Jews then disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" So Jesus said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. And those who eat my flesh and drink my blood have eternal life, and I will raise them up on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me and I live because of the Father, so whoever eats me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like that which your ancestors ate and they died, but the one who eats this bread will live forever."
The wind that shakes the barley, it will not Shake me the wind that shakes the barley, it will not. Shake me the wind that shakes the barley, won't shake me. Like my mama told me, this I know and I see. The fire that takes the kindling, it will not take me. The fire that shakes the kindling, it will not take me. The fire that takes the kindling, it will not take me. Like my grandma told me, this I know.
Struggle together. Things were going well for the first few days, but then about 10 or 15 days later, after the white people in Montgomery knew that we meant business, they started doing some nasty things. They started making nasty telephone calls and came to the point that some days more than 40 telephone calls had come in, threatening my life, the life of my family, the life of my children. I took it for a while in a strong manner, but I never will forget one night very late. It was around midnight. And you can have some strange experiences at midnight. I had been out meeting with the steering committee all that night. I came home. My wife was in the bed, and I immediately crawled into bed to get some rest, to get up early the next morning to try to keep things going. And immediately, the telephone started ringing, and I picked it up. On the other end was an ugly voice. That voice said to me in substance, "Nigger, we are tired of you and your mess now. And if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, gonna blow your brains out and blow up your house." I've heard these things before, but for some reason that night it got to me. I turned over and I tried to go to sleep, but I couldn't sleep. I was frustrated. bewildered. Then I got up and went back to the kitchen and I started warming some coffee, thinking the coffee would give me a little relief. And then I started thinking about many things. I pulled back on the theology and philosophy that I had just studied in the universities, trying to give philosophical and theological reasons for the existence and the reality of sin and evil, but the answer didn't quite come there. I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born about a month earlier. We have four children now, but we only had one then. She was the darling of my life. I'd come in night after night and see that little gentle smile. I sat at that table thinking about that little girl and thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from any minute. And I started thinking about a dedicated, devoted, and loyal wife who was over there asleep. She could be taken from me, I could be taken from her. I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. Something said to me, "You can't call on Daddy now. He's up in Atlanta, 175 miles away. You can't even call on Mama now. You gotta call on that something and that person that your daddy used to tell you about. That power that can make a way out of no way." I discovered then that religion had to become real to me and I had to know God for myself. I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I never will forget it. Oh, yes, I prayed a prayer and I prayed out loud that night. I said, "Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage." It seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, "Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you even until the end of the world." I tell you, I've seen the lightning flash. I've heard the thunder roll. I've felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus saying, "Still to fight on." He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. No, never alone. No, never alone. Promise never to leave me. Never to leave me alone. Sometimes I feel discouraged. I don't mind telling you this morning that sometimes I feel discouraged. I felt discouraged in Chicago. As I moved through Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama, I feel discouraged. Living every day under the threat of death, I feel discouraged sometimes. Living every day under extensive criticism, even from Negroes, I feel discouraged sometimes. Yes, sometimes I feel discouraged and feel my works in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. God bless you.
the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "I've conquered the fear of dying, and a man that's conquered the fear of dying has conquered everything. I don't have to fear any man." President Barack Obama said of him, "It is precisely because Dr. King was a man of flesh and blood and not a figure of stone that he inspires us so. His life, his story, tells us that change can come if you don't give up." Martin Luther King Jr., scholar, husband, father, pastor, protester, leader, and legend. From 1955 to 1968, he was a leader of peace with justice in the United States. On August 28, 1963, he spoke his "I Have a Dream" speech at the Abraham Lincoln Memorial March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. And then just a little over 2 weeks, instead of a dream, he had a nightmare. I recently returned from an immersion trip for my doctoral program called Immersion Experience of the Civil Rights Movement in Alabama, in Birmingham, Montgomery, and Selma. And on Wednesday of our week there, we met with a member of the 16th Street Baptist Church. And this member, Mr. Ted Debro, told us about this nightmare. Instead of being there in Birmingham at the 16th Street Baptist Church, that day in September 15th, 1963, he was at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia, where Dr. King was pastoring alongside of his father. And Mr. Debro was a Morehouse man, like Dr. King, and he had seen this young man speak many times with great confidence and security. But this morning, he said he noticed something was off about him as he looked at him up in the chancel area. He seemed shaken. In fact, he had noticed they had gone back probably to the office and come back twice. And when he came up to the pulpit, he just cried out, Mr. Debro said, in such a way that seemed to say something to the effect of, "Lord, was it for this that you had called me?" You see, that very morning at 10:22, a bomb had gone off at the 16th Street Baptist Church, and he had received a phone call about it. And then later, a second call that said that in that bombing, four little girls had died. This was a pivotal moment for this man of flesh and blood. And the violence continued in that struggle, and it continues to this day, as we know. From last year in Charlottesville to this year, the Unite the Right in Washington, D.C., we know that white supremacists continue to gather and organize, and that hate crimes, violence continues. My doctoral ministry program is in public engagement, and it was inspired by a seminary student at Wesley Theological Seminary who was finishing up his doctorate while he was also serving as a state senator and also serving as a pastor at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. In 2015, he was signed up to take this immersion class that I just took in Alabama. But instead of being able to attend it earlier in June on the 17th, he and a few parishioners were gathered for a Bible study when Dylan Roof joined their study, a white supremacist who then killed 9 of them, including the pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney. Wesley Theological Seminary launched this program in January 2017 for clergy to study and to be inspired by this witness of public engagement. King, Pinckney, and faith leaders who to this day organize to counter hate activists draw from a core faith that sustains them in the face of death. The wording of our scripture today that Pastor Linda read might be a little odd, if you kind of focus on those exact words, a little odd to our contemporary English ears, but it's meant to serve as a metaphor that Jesus' flesh for the life of this world is his flesh given in death. Flesh, like blood, becomes a metaphor for death. Jesus is fed by doing the will of God. Similarly, disciples are fed by following Jesus, even to death, if necessary. Along his journey, Reverend Dr. King wrestled with his faith and his fear. Faith, strong. Fear, stronger. Faith, stronger. Can anybody relate to that? That kind of struggle of which will win this day. Will my faith be stronger than my fear, or will my fear overcome my faith? Faith that leaders need to have a vision that they believe in. And Dr. King believed in this vision, that he understood the Jesus movement to be about this vision of the beloved community. Today, we continue to organize around this vision, extending the invitation to all who will receive it to participate in this vision. King followed his faith and his sense of righteousness from Selma to Jackson to Chicago and beyond, demanding equal rights in the face of intense resistance. But he says in the sermon that we just listened to that he would sometimes feel discouraged. And he had to find that faith that would sustain him. So how did he find it? How did he come to that faith? Well, you might think if you just do a quick Wikipedia search on Martin Luther King, well, he was the son of a preacher. So he had faith. He had that nailed, right? Any preacher's kids in the house? Oh, if only it were that easy. As a clergy person myself, married to a clergy person with two kids, oh, I wish it were that simple, that simply faith was in our DNA. And we had it, and it was always strong and always mighty and greater than our fear and our self-doubt. But he couldn't come by it that way. He had to find it for himself. He had to find that firm foundation. Because if you're going to build a house, you need to have a firm foundation. If you're going to build a life of faith, you have to have that firm foundation. And you have to have that so that it sustains you no matter what. No matter what storms may come your way. And so in that moment when the crisis comes, when you're struggling with fear that is tempting to overcome your faith, when you are facing life or death situations or some kind of crisis or struggle, you have to be able to find and taste and eat that bread of life which will sustain you. It's not the time that you need to gather the ingredients and Google that recipe for that faith bread. It's a time that you will have to have tasted it and digested it and know for yourself which sustains you. Training, knowledge, and discipline is necessary in anything that we do in our life, and so much more so for our faith. So how did Dr. King find that faith? He had to find it for himself. He said in that sermon that he had to make religion real for him, and he couldn't just call on his daddy or his mother, but find that which would sustain him. I am grateful for Dr. Anthony Hunt, a United Methodist clergy and professor who led our class. He has a vision of beloved community so that all who participate in this immersion are a part of this community. And the people who gather on these Alabama immersions come from many different traditions, such as Assembly of God or Episcopalian. In fact, the Episcopal priest was from Liberia who had survived being a refugee in Ghana, who now is serving as a pastor in Virginia. Go God. There was a Seventh-day Adventist, there was a Lutheran, a Baptist, and some of the students in our program are participants in the military chaplaincy program at Wesley, and one was from Ghana, and he's an imam in the Muslim faith. One day, he led a reflection time with us, and he spoke about the golden rule and how it's common in many different faith traditions. And he said, this is central for achieving peace. Later that day, we ate at a restaurant called the Golden Rule, barbecue and grill. And they even have it on their shirts, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And then they have this profound wisdom, love thy neighbor, give them barbecue. But we see Dawood in the back, and in the Muslim tradition, I think he ordered a salad that day. Later, we went on to visit the home of Dr. King and his family when he served as the pastor at Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery. And we stood around that kitchen table. That kitchen table he talked about in his sermon, where after receiving a phone call, which he had received many, but that night at midnight, as he shared, he was shaken so much that he had to go to the table. Like many of you today have come to the table. But he had to go to the table that was beyond what we see there. He had to go to that come to Jesus moment where he came to encounter the truth, the light, the hope that would be his freedom. He shared in his sermon that he was sitting there and over a cup of coffee at that table, and he said, Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. But Lord, I confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage, he said. Could you imagine getting phone calls threatening your life because of your ministry? Losing my courage would be an understatement. His life of his wife, his life of his daughter, they were being threatened. He was being run out of town, and he was praying to the Lord. He said, it seemed that at that moment, I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you even until the end of the world. You could say at that table that Dr. King ate the bread of heaven that became for him the bread of freedom. And because he did that, the world changed. Imagine our life if Dr. King had not found that bread of freedom. Imagine what the future holds for our world that's counting on each of us to go to the table, to find that bread of life that becomes for us the bread of freedom. It is one thing, and it's a beautiful thing to come to the table. And it is a wonderful moment when we come to the table. But it is the table, that moment where that religion of our parents or the religion of tradition has to become real for us, and we taste and see that the Lord is good, and we find our freedom that will sustain us in the no matter whatness of life. See, Dr. King had to find that, and it had to be bigger than any institution. It had to be bigger than any organized religion. It had to be bigger than anything that he could give words to. It was an inner strength, a mystery, if you will. And we have to hear that inner voice for us this day, where we are called by name. Linda, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Matt, stand up for truth. Stand up for what you believe in. This is why I've called you. You know that the organized religion of that time, including Methodists, was the home church of Bull Connor, the elected commissioner of public safety who turned the water hoses on those children standing in protest. He taught Sunday school. Methodist of this day, Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, believes in the separation of children from their families. You can't count on the institution. You have to know it for yourself. You can't run away from it because there are hypocrites. There's hypocrites everywhere. You have to find it for yourself and find your truth. And therein, find your freedom. Dr. King would face difficult days, we know. And they wanted to hold him down and oppress him. But before he'd be a slave, he went to that table and he prayed. Yes, we try to feed our hunger in many different ways. But the invitation from Jesus and from the cloud of witnesses is that we would receive that which sustains us in all things, and that is the bread of heaven, bread of freedom. After all, it is for each of us to take, eat. This is your life given for you. Live it to the fullness of your freedom and love.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, and before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Freedom over me. And before I'll be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
No more mourning, no more mourning, no. And go home to